He had doubted this past year, had wondered. Raylith paused, eyes still fixed below, rubbing his chin as he thought.
What you just said, like so many of their arguments, is a distraction.
Davian felt his brow furrow.
How so? Because it is like listening to a piece of music and judging the composer by how skillfully the musician is playing it. The question that needs answering isn't ever who acts better. It is easy to seize upon the worst of groups, but every group is a collection of individuals, and every individual is flawed. Some are contrary, some are outright liars when they say that they believe in something. So every action has to be assessed against what someone claims they believe, not simply seen as a result of it.
He shrugged.
Does that make sense? You should never judge the sides of an argument simply by who is doing the arguing.
Davian nodded slowly.
So what is the question that needs answering then?
The one that got me sent here?
The one which the Venerate don't want asked?
Raylith leaned forward.
Simply put, do you believe that mankind should have no authority higher than itself?
Surely that's not what the Venerate are suggesting.
It is. And they would tell you the same. It is exactly what their version of El is offering. A world where all possibilities are promised is, by necessity, a world in which God cannot take part, cannot choose to affect the world in any way. If he exerts his will, even a fraction, he is by definition changing how things could have been. He is removing possible outcomes.
Raylith held Davian's gaze, calm certainty in his eyes.
They are trying to convince everyone that our Creator wished to create a world in which he could not take part, could not help, guide, or save, in which he was functionally irrelevant.
Davian was quiet for a long few moments. He'd never thought of it in those terms, but Raylith was right. That was the world the Venerate wanted.
So their El is nothing like the one I was taught about as a child, Davian said eventually.
Somehow he had always pictured the god the Venerate spoke about as being the same as the one he had grown up with, but simply trapped. His role in the stories reversed with Shemaloth's.
If we are talking about the same one, then yes. He is very different, said Raylith quietly. The El I believe in is not just the creator of this world, but inextricably tied to it. If he were to withdraw from it, it would cease to be as we know it. It would become a place where all the things we value, all things that have beauty and life and meaning, are simply not possible. His absence wouldn't mean a lack of authority. It would mean complete and utter desolation.
Davian rubbed his forehead. That was what the old religion still taught. And he doesn't just reveal himself, clear up the confusion, because... Raylith shrugged.
Because we're meant to realize that this is important, and figure it out for ourselves. No decision without doubt, he added, clearly quoting something. El could convince the world in a heartbeat, but if he did, it would no longer be our choice to follow him. Instead, he enables us to choose him.
Davian sniffed.
And how did the Venerate respond to you saying all of this?
Well, I'm here,
said Raylith with a rueful smile. He shrugged.
They defended their position. They said that those were lies created by Shemaloth, and that El created the world for us to live free, to make our own decisions, that giving us our independence would in fact be his greatest act of love, that we were meant to make our own mistakes, hopefully recognize and potentially right them, and yes, potentially fail too, but that it would be our path, either way, our own choices that led to whatever outcome came.
Raylith shook his head.
But it never sounded right to me. What kind of God would create us and then leave us with no guiding hand, no plan to the mercies of chance alone? Is a lack of discipline caring? Is absence somehow love? Should a father take his newborn and cast it out into the wild, helpless and alone, all because he does not want to unduly influence its life?
Raylith's eyes were hard.
So no, I do not believe the Venerate. The very idea of their ale sickens me to my stomach, and even if what they say is somehow true, I would never follow a god that would abandon us to ourselves.
Raylith fell silent, then gave a rueful shake of his head.
Sorry. I know I can go on when it comes to this, and it's a lot to think on. But this place, you never know how long you have.
His fingers brushed absently at his chest where Davian knew the lingering dark still lay.
That realization hit me hard this past week. I do not know what you believe, Davian, but the thought of someone else being taken in by their arguments, when I could have done something about it with the time I have left, is something I cannot let pass any more.
Davian nodded slowly.
Thank you, he said, meaning it.
Raylith had spoken passionately, but logically, too. That helped. It hadn't completely eliminated his doubts. He suspected that he needed to think long and hard on what had just been said, but it was enough to ease his mind for now. He was about to say more when he realized that there was movement on the far side of the breach. He stiffened, gripping Raylith silently by the arm and indicating the motion. Istharis was slithering toward them along the bridge, trailed by three Elgoriat, the latter all carrying barrels as easily as if they had been empty. The Dargaethan and her unsettling retinue made their way across the shadowed bridge, the Elgoriat not paying them any attention as they passed by. Once on the nearer side of the breach, Istharis continued to move purposefully northward, quickly vanishing among the maze of red-tinted buildings. Davian exchanged a glance with Raylith, and the two men crept as fast as they dared in the same direction. Davian and Raylith half-sneaked, half-jogged after Istharis, keeping low behind broken walls and piles of rubble to avoid being spotted by an errant glance. They had already discussed at some length how best to follow the Dargaethan. The twisting, circuitous layout of Zavalar made simple shadowing almost impossible, but by keeping to the higher ways they were able to catch occasional glimpses of Istharis and her followers, enough to determine their quarry's general direction and to make sure they didn't get too close or too far behind. It was 10 minutes into their pursuit that they rounded a corner and came face to face with the Elgoriat. Davian skidded to a stop, Raylith crashing hard into his back. Davian barely noticed, his entire attention focused on the creature ahead. It was facing them, blocking the path, not 20 feet from where they stood. It cocked its head to the side, needle-like teeth glistening red in a lipless mouth. The smooth skin, where its eyes should have been, seemed to examine them. Davian heard Raylith's intake of breath from behind him. There was nowhere to go, no way they could run from this. From desperate, horrified instinct, he reached for Khan. The Elgoriat's mouth somehow widened, and it took a lumbering step toward them, more curious than aggressive. They seemed to operate on a predatory instinct, though. This felt as if the thing was playing with them, waiting for them to react. There was a moment when his effort to reach Khan was just like every other time. He stretched for the dark energy, strained and scrabbled at the power that was right there if he could just reach a little further. And then he was pushing through it. He froze, almost losing his grip again in shock before focusing. He'd managed to grasp Khan, but the connection was tenuous, barely there. He couldn't do much, and he couldn't do it for long. But now that Davian was finally holding Khan, he realized that the same power was emanating from the Bane. He had only a heartbeat to process what he was seeing. Thousands of dark threads waving like living things, like a cloud of snakes from the creature's body. They wormed their way outward and everywhere for what appeared to be hundreds of feet, touching buildings, ground, rubble. Davian and Raylith. Davian fumbled with the little con he was able to use and threw up a hardened shield, cutting off the tendrils attached to him and Raylith. It was thin, weak, barely anything, but it was the best he could do. The Algoriot stopped. A soft gargling sound erupted from its throat, the first time Davian had heard one of the creatures make such a noise. Davian gripped Raylith by the shoulder and gradually, cautiously, pulled him back. The tendrils waved around them, flapped at his shield, and slid off. The Algoriot continued to make the strange noise, but hadn't moved. It seemed to be still staring at the spot where Davian and Raylith had been when it had first spotted them. Davian carefully took two steps to the side, pulling Raylith with him. The Algoriot didn't track the motion. Sight. That was what those con threads were for. That had to be it. The Algoriot abruptly vanished, then reappeared immediately in the space where Davian and Raylith had been standing a few seconds earlier. With its unnaturally long legs, it was perhaps one or two strides away from being able to touch them. Its head waved around wildly, as if in confusion. It vanished again. This time it didn't reappear. Davian exhaled, every limb trembling. Beside him he could see Raylith, still frozen to the spot, clearly unwilling to move for fear that the creature was still nearby.
What just happened?
The other man whispered, voice shaking. Davian swallowed.
We need to catch up to Astaris. I'll explain later, he murmured. For now, I think we're safe.
Safe?
Repeated Raylith, the word coming out close to a hiss. He evidently heard the near panic in his own voice because he held up a hand apologetically, nodding, though Davian could see that he was still shaken.
You're right. Go.
They hurried forward, Davian suddenly feeling more confident than he had since he had arrived. He'd done it. He was using Khan again. He still doubted that he could do much more than he was currently. In fact, he didn't think that he'd be able to maintain even this flimsy shield for long. The focus needed was far more than it should have been. The only reason he forced himself to maintain it now was that he feared that if he let it go, he wouldn't be able to get it back again. But it was progress. He would be able to fill his reserve once more. He would be able to keep healing Raylith, maybe even try eliminating the dark in him entirely if he could find an essence source big enough. It was 2 minutes before Raylith grabbed Davian's arm, pointing silently to the north. Davian followed the gesture, spotting the outline of an Algoriot hauling a barrel through the moonlight just before it disappeared over a rise. They hurried in that direction, approaching the spot where the Algoriot had been. Davian frowned. The buildings immediately in front of them were little more than piles of rubble. Clearly, the destruction had hit hard here, even harder than in the other parts of the city. But beyond them he couldn't see anything. No other buildings? No raised pathways or tunnels, just open air. A cliff. He crept forward alongside Raylith, doing his best not to send loose stones skittering. Raylith climbed carefully around one of the piles of rubble, and then lay on his stomach, motioning for Davian to do the same. The two of them wormed forward until their heads peeked over the edge of the drop. Davian swallowed as the dingy, red-tinged scene below came into view. A deep, circular dip in the ground stretched away before them. Perhaps a mile wide, it had bowl-like sides that curved upward, smooth and looking virtually unclimbable except for three separate points Davian could see, each of which was guarded by two Dargathan. Structures architecturally similar to the ones up top dotted its base, which appeared relatively flat. The indentation had to have been made before the city's destruction, rather than being due to it then. It was the center, though, that drew Davian's eye. A massive expanse of flat ground, a few hundred feet in diameter at least, was bare of buildings or even rubble, except for a few small structures in the middle, which were in turn clustered tightly around a square tower. The edifice was tall, almost the same height as the crater's edge. It glimmered in the dull light, glinted and shone. Metal. The entire thing was made of metal. He swallowed, hearing an almost desirous sigh from Raylith as the other man spotted the same thing. After a moment he tore his eyes from the sight, gaze flicking away and down. Surrounding the area containing the tower and its ancillary structures, flooding the open, otherwise cleared space, at least 100 Elgori had roamed. Raylith tentatively shifted closer to Davian.
"So, this is where they take it," he said softly, motioning to the west.
Davian twisted slightly, spotting Istharis and her Elgoriot as they carted the barrels of metal down one of the pathways.
"Now what?"
Davian swallowed.
"I'm not sure,"
he admitted. Getting here was as far ahead as he'd thought.
"That's a forge,"
said Raylith suddenly, gesturing to one of the other buildings in the center, off to the right of the tower. Thin black smoke rose from a chimney jutting from its roof.
"They must melt it all down. El alone knows why, though."
They observed for a while, Davian's muscles beginning to stiffen from the awkwardly held position. He was just about to consider getting a better view when suddenly a flurry of activity from one of the pathways into the crater drew his eye. Three Dargaethan were descending, a single man shepherded among them, shoved forcefully every few steps despite not giving any apparent sign of resistance. Davian didn't recognize him, but he walked calmly, head forward, looking neither to the right nor the left as other Dargaethan nearby stopped what they were doing and stared at him. The Dargaethan escorted him calmly along the basin floor and out into the sea of roaming Elgoriot. The tall, eyeless creatures turned as soon as the prisoners stepped out onto the cleared space, some of them blinking in an instant from the far side of the glimmering tower to where the intrusion was occurring. The man ignored the creatures, walking on unfazed between the Dargaethan, who were apparently there to prevent him from being eaten. They crossed the wide-open space within 30 seconds, vanishing into the metal tower. Davian turned to Raylith, and his heart skipped a beat. Raylith had gone white, his hands trembling, looking unable to tear his eyes from the scene. When Davian placed a gentle hand on Raylith's shoulder, the other man flinched.
"What is it?"
Davian asked nervously. Raylith swallowed, then began inching backward.
"We have to go," he whispered. "Now!"
There was a shortness of breath to his words, a genuine panic. Davian frowned, but followed him.
"Why? What did you see?"
He glanced over his shoulder back at where the man had been.
"Did you recognize him?"
Raylith nodded slowly, clearly still aghast, eyes full of fear. He leaned in close and kept his voice almost inaudibly low, as if the words themselves might bring down some sort of harm.
"Have you ever heard the name Arkhine Tveit?"
he whispered. Chapter 23 The wells were eerily silent as Caden stepped through the newly opened gate and swiftly slashed behind himself with Khan, cutting through the machinery of the portal. He allowed himself to breathe again as it winked out of existence. He had built the gate to open in a section of the wells where Alaris had no reason to be, but he also knew his friend would be desperate. Caden still half expected Alaris to appear in front of him at any moment, vainly attempting to rush to the portal before it closed. The Venerate would certainly have detected its opening, particularly as there was precious little else to demand his attention down here. But there was nothing. The shimmering, coalescing veins of color trickled all around Caden, but there was no sound, no other sign of movement. He closed his eyes, envisaging the layout of the wells. He'd spent a lot of time down here, not just the month with Asar trying to restore his memory, but much of the past year as well. It was as secure a base as he could hope to find, and though Nethgulla was able to access it, he didn't fear her as he once had. She was manipulative and terribly dangerous to those he loved, but not to him. Never to him. He started walking. Though the network of tunnels was vast, the amount of essence the Darisians had drawn from the earth had been simply staggering. There were only a few places that were actually designed for occupation. During his own time down here, He had naturally gravitated to Asar's quarters, a comfortable bed close to the vast stores of stockpiled food and water, and plenty of reading and writing material. There wasn't a great deal else to do aside from sitting and thinking, which had occupied plenty of Caden's time as well, to be fair. His footsteps echoed as he walked. Despite the familiar surroundings, he found himself tense, ready to leap at every shadow. Alaris would not have taken kindly to being tricked. In fact, as far as Caden knew, the man had never suffered a defeat quite like this one. Though the Alaris he knew was always calm, always rational, and looking for a peaceable solution, Caden also knew that much of that attitude came from the knowledge that he was all but impossible to beat. It wasn't a veneer, exactly. He was a good man. Of that, Caden had no doubt. But he'd seen the flashes of anger to which his friend was prone, too. Still, no surprise attack came, and the longer the silence stretched, the more nervous Caden became. He had expected desperation, resistance at the least. Was Alaris even still here? There was no way he could have escaped, surely. Nethgulla was off in Talangol, according to Siner, so she could not have stumbled in here and let him go by accident, though that was the kind of mistake she would never have made anyway. And Gassandred had never been here, had access to no one who had, and had no way of divining that Alaris was being kept here in the first place. There was still the concern, sitting in the back of his mind ever since his conversation with Siner, that Nethgulla had been captured and that Gassandred had forced her to show him her memory of the wells. But while that was possible, he felt it was highly unlikely. Nethgulla was nothing if not good at hiding. Finally, he came to the door to Asar's room. It was ajar. Caden nudged it open. The room both looked and felt as if a hurricane of fire had torn through it. The books that had once lined the walls, Asar's carefully accumulated works from 1,000 years detailing the collected truth about Shemaloth, were ash. Gone. Hot pressure blasted his face from where the walls had absorbed the heat. Charred scraps of paper littered the floor everywhere, along with the occasional splintered piece of bookshelf which appeared to have been ripped apart. Caden leaned against the doorpost, stunned. It wasn't as if he had expected Alaris to be converted by reading. Though the sheer volume of observations about Shemaloth were compelling, they said nothing that had not already been said. But he hadn't expected this. "I hope you like the new decor." Caden flinched at the voice, twisting to see what he hadn't noticed amid the devastation. Alaris, sitting in the sole remaining chair in the corner, almost hidden in shadow. He looked beyond weary. "You did this?" It was a rhetorical question. He'd known before seeing Alaris there, but he still had to ask. "Why?" Alaris smiled tiredly. "Something to do." Caden shook his head. "You think this will make a difference?" "We do what we can. This was what was left to me," said Alaris, a touch bitterly. "If you prevail, if you make this world a prison, I do not want to leave anything that claims it is not. I cannot stand the thought that not only will all people be prisoners, but that they might accept it as right." Caden glared. "You think that this is part of the problem, Alaris?" he asked. "We were always so dogmatic. Early on, we actually thought. We discussed, we listened. We fought amongst ourselves and disagreed. We allowed for dissenting opinions. But after a while, we did exactly what we used to mock everyone else for doing. We settled. We no longer questioned." He licked his lips. "And it made us lose respect for what others thought, especially those who did not live as long as us, had not seen the things we had seen. We bought into the lie that we were smarter than all of them, better than all of them. And so we did things like this." He gestured. "We tried to destroy ideas, Alaris. Shouldn't the arrogance of that concept make you cringe?" Alaris was silent for a moment.
When something is self-evident, when something is inescapably true, then yes, I believe it is right to crush the concepts that oppose it from existence, because they are not ideas, Talcamar. They are lies.
His lip curled.
It is calling it idea or belief that is the problem. It is seductive. It can fool even the smartest of people.
He gave Caden a pointed look. Caden shook his head.
That does not gel with what you taught me, he said grimly. That was not what you would have said when... That man died a long time ago, Tal. Idealism is one thing, but this is about the fate of the world.
Caden studied the scene. The lingering heat indicated that this had just happened. Alaris had decided to do this as soon as he had detected Caden entering the wells, not before. Alaris's gaze slid to the sheathed blade hanging at Caden's side.
So, I did not think you would retrieve it as quickly as you did, he said heavily.
There was a note of something in his voice, not fear exactly, but definite unease.
I may be outmatched, Tal, but know this, I will fight. And I wonder, when it comes time, when you have to do it, will you? Can you? After all you've been through, can you truly strike the killing blow without hesitation?
Caden said nothing, though inwardly he understood. Of course Alaris thought the blade at his side was Lycanius. Why else risk coming here? And Alaris was preparing for a fight that he knew he could not possibly win, given how much stronger Caden would be with Lycanius. He was doing everything he could to sow seeds of doubt, give himself the faintest hint of an advantage. Caden gazed at Alaris sadly.
Will you talk with me? One last time?
He hadn't expected this, but part of him needed to try.
I told you at Elcathronon, the time for talking has passed, said Alaris.
He straightened, looking Caden in the eye.
Tell me one thing, though, Talcamar, because I am curious. Are you going to keep your promise to him?
To who?
The boy.
Alaris's lip curled as if he were unable to bring himself to say the name.
The one who saved you. The one you promised to save in return.
Alaris held his gaze.
We read that much from him early on. It was all he could think about for a while. I even thought you might have meant it, those first few months.
Circumstances changed.
But not your heart, apparently, rejoined Alaris harshly.
Caden scowled. There was no benefit to giving Alaris the reason, but Caden needed him to know.
You want to know why I didn't try and rescue him? He asked. Because he didn't need it. Because the only thing I needed to do was ensure that he was sent to Zavalar.
He held Alaris's gaze coldly. Alaris stared back, puzzled at first, then eyes slowly widening.
I'll take it, he muttered bitterly, hanging his head. I cannot tell you how disappointed I was to hear that he was tortured, though,
Caden continued quietly.
You had to have known that the Escherai would not hold back. That evil is on you, Alaris. I don't understand why you care,
Alaris's voice was suddenly vicious again, full of pent-up frustration.
He is just a boy, Tal. Of all the lives to cross our paths, of all the people, why him? What makes him so special?
Caden shifted.
If I didn't know any better, Alaris, I would say that you are jealous.
Alaris looked at him incredulously.
Of course I am jealous, he said, laughing in bitter disbelief. We all are. The man who was more convincing to you in a few minutes than we were able to be in thousands of years. The man whose friendship you have valued over those whom you have spent hundreds of lifetimes alongside. A ghost against which we could never compete. The perfect ideal of self-sacrifice and truth. And as a result, the man who might have single-handedly enslaved the world.
His face hardened.
That has always been your curse, Tal. You enshrine those whom you have lost, whom you have killed. You raise them above the living. Their voices drown out all others who try to reason with you. They are your gods."
Caden was silent. "Perhaps you are right," he said softly. "But it goes both ways. Eliavia drove me for so long, you know that as well as anyone, and that was entirely to Shemaloth's benefit." He sighed. "Davian's sacrifice has driven me as well, true, but far from blindly. You want to know why he moved me? He gave me the gift of doubt. He made me examine myself. He made me question." He drew knowing, trying to ignore the sick feeling that holding the blade imparted.
"And that is the only way we can ever find answers, Alaris."
Alaris's eyes went wide as he saw the blade, but Caden already knew that this was the easy part. Alaris had no weapon of his own, and they were relatively equally matched, perhaps not across a long fight like the one at El Catherinen, but here in these close quarters, for the time Caden needed, it was more than enough. Alaris leaped to his feet, snatched up his chair with essence and flung it, but Caden was already moving, smoothly sidestepping the attack and letting time flow around him. He lunged forward, Alaris barely avoiding the blade as it slid by his shoulder. The venerate backed away, wide-eyed, time bending around him too now.
"You came here for information?" gasped Alaris.
He was suddenly alert, more alive than he had seemed at any point during their conversation. He thought he had a chance now. If Caden had no way to kill him, then he had to instead get out while leaving Alaris behind, a much more difficult task. Caden blurred forward, the blade slashing again and again, increasingly close to Alaris, until finally an attack caught him. Just a cut across the forearm, but it was enough. Caden could feel the knowledge seeping into him. He searched through it, focusing internally, seeking out what he was after. The flow of information was unpleasant, as if it were coated in filth, but Caden gritted his teeth and allowed it in. Some of it was vague, more feeling than fact. The cut had been small, and knowing would focus on taking what Caden wanted to know rather than everything it could, but it was enough. He backed away, eyes going wide.
"I'll take it," he said, feeling the blood drain from his face.
His heart started to pound, and he gazed at Alaris in shock. When he spoke, he couldn't keep the ache from his voice.
"Why?"
Alaris's face twisted, and Caden saw a flicker of the guilt that was hiding behind the facade. A guilt he knew all too well.
"Because you forced us,"
panted Alaris eventually, nursing his arm, though he sounded unconvinced even as he said it.
"Because you led us here, Tal."
"Shemaloth has led you here, just as he led me," replied Caden.
If ever he had wondered since he had woken in the forest with no memories, if ever he had doubted that he was on the right side, those doubts were gone now. He heard the red-hot anger in his voice, but he didn't care, was barely able to think straight from the fury bubbling within him.
"You say we were friends? How could you keep this from me? From me?"
"Because we all knew how you would react. Like this."
Alaris nodded to Caden's fists, which were clenched so tightly around the hilt of knowing that his knuckles had turned bright white.
"Davian may have been the feather that caused the roof to collapse, but we all know the true cause. Dorisi was not your fault. It was Shemaloth's, the real Shemaloth, the one who has imprisoned us all. But you were never able to fully accept that its burden was not yours to bear. It was too great a thing, too great a shame. And our reactions? They did not help,"
Alaris conceded bleakly.
"But when the Ilshara was raised, when the plan was suggested, we all agreed. We needed the contingency."
Caden took a step back, dazed, horrified.
"I thought that you'd kept me away from the Desrealites because... because you were suspicious,"
he admitted faintly.
"Oh, there was that, too," Alaris assured him dryly. "In retrospect, I am still unsure how you convinced us that Andriel had fooled you into helping him with the Ilshara. Hindsight sees perfectly in all that, I suppose." I just assumed you were using them as a backdrop, a secondary army of zealots should the need arise. I understood that.
It had seemed logical enough at the time, and it especially seemed like something that would appeal to Cassandrid.
But giving them columns? Giving them the ability to wipe out...
He trailed off, not knowing what else to say. There was silence for a few seconds.
And now you have given them the order, Caden finally finished. You were intending to lead them in the fight yourself? After everything you saw the columns do, to Darisi, to me, you still volunteered to be the one to use them?
He swallowed, everything coming together in his head.
Isiliar's tributary. That's why it was so easy for you to meet with me. You wanted to run the test from El-Catherine in one more time. You had to be certain that you had the exact location of the Serrarium, he said, voice tinged with horror.
It shouldn't have been possible, but Diara had seemingly found a flaw in the tributary's design, devised a way to trace the flow of essence to its destination. The Venerate already knew where the Serrarium was. Alaris had been scheduled to return to El-Catherinin simply to make sure that there had been no errors in their calculations. Once he had finished there, he had been meant to return briefly to Ilshan Gath-Del-Teth, and then go straight to Desriel to lead the assault, one that would have been delayed by his absence, but only fleetingly. Alaris's gaze was hard.
I tried, you know. I did everything I could to stop this from happening. Even after the boundary was strengthened again, I argued for finding that last tributary, for convincing the girl inside of it to leave.
He shook his head.
Ultimately, the lives lost in this war, the aftermath of the columns draining the Serrarium, none of it matters. We will each have our opportunities for redemption once El reaches Dylanus. Even you, Tal, though you don't deserve it. All that is done will be undone.
Caden closed his eyes. The Ilshara itself could have withstood an attack like this. It was a vast, complex construction, hundreds of interconnected parts distributed over thousands of miles that would reinforce and repair each other. Not even the columns, staggeringly destructive though they were, could strike every section of it at once. The store of essence that powered it, though, that was a different story. Like the tributaries, part of the Serrarium's strength had been the fact that it was hidden. It had been built to be nigh impregnable nonetheless, but against the annihilating strength of the columns, its defenses would simply have no chance. If the columns were arrayed in the right place, the Serrarium would be ripped apart just as surely as anything else. Caden opened his eyes again, a few points of confusion finally becoming clear. This was why Diara had offered the deal to Asha. Why the Venerate had switched their focus to finding Nethgala. The Ath had caused countless problems for them over the years, and they no doubt wanted to be certain that she would not be able to interfere again so close to the end. She was, perhaps, the last remaining unknown for them. But Caden knew she had already done all she could. If the Serrarium was destroyed, Asha's power would simply have nowhere to go. The boundary would fall, the forces beyond would sweep through Andara's remaining defenses, probably few after what Desriel was about to do, and then the Darklands. An end to all that was good.
Well, that makes things easy, said Caden quietly, pain still coloring each word. There was nothing else to do here. If his old friend was willing to go through with this, had kept this hidden from him all this time, then there would be no swaying him.
Caden stepped outside of time and ran. Alaris was quickly after him, but a second or two of hesitation had cost him. Caden was already away down the tunnels, colorful lines streaking past as he drew the white stone from his pocket, Nethgala's symbol engraved on its surface. He fed essence into it, not stopping, then glanced over his shoulder as a bolt of energy streaked past him. Alaris was within sight, but he was too far back. Caden could see the desperation on his friend's face and, despite everything, couldn't help but feel a twinge of guilt. The portal opened in front of him, and the moment he dove through, the stone still in his hand, it winked out again behind him, cutting short Alaris's frantic, frustrated shout. He rolled as he let go of time, skidding along the white sand of the beach. It was just past noon, and the sun beat down with a pleasant intensity. Waves lapped gently on the shore, with the constant crashing of larger ones audible on the reef a little farther out. He lay there, panting. This island had once been a Darisian outpost, tiny and strategically unimportant though it was. It had been a very long time indeed before the Veneret had uncovered its true value, a massive source of essence, deep within the earth. The Darisians had used the wells to draw that essence to the surface, giving them fuel for everything from their iron sails to their light cannons. Caden glanced around. There were enough trees that he couldn't see the other side of the island, but it was a near thing. Only 1,000 feet separating the farthest points. The entire place was little more than a gentle hump in the ocean. The remains of a Darisian fortress sat crumbling at its center, abandoned for millennia, and yet still largely intact. They'd never achieved the builder's level of skill in engineering, no one had, but their structures had certainly stood the test of time. He groaned, staggering to his feet and picking up the black counterpart to the white travel stone, taking a minute to charge them again. It was a precaution he'd remembered learning to take every time they were used. The same essence signature was needed in each stone for them to work, meaning that if they got separated prematurely, they became useless. He'd found that out the hard way many centuries ago. That had been a long month of walking. When he was done, he slipped the stones back into his pocket, stretching and contemplating the crystal blue ocean. He could gait back to where he needed to go now. His face grew grim as he considered where that was. Ilinilon. He would simply have to hope that he was not further delayed once there. And if he was, then Asha would just have to handle Diara by herself. He felt a stab of guilt at risking her like this when he had promised to return, but more than anything right now, Weir needed to be warned of what was coming. The Darisians would not be attacking from Talmiel as the Andarans would expect, and the Gilshar had Banes, all the Dargathan and Elatai that had breached the Ilshara a year ago. If Weir and the Assembly were not forewarned, they would be wiped out, and the Boundary along with them. He did his best to ignore the growing apprehension worming its way into his gut, and settled down to work on the gate. Chapter 24. Asha winced and brushed a light sheen of sweat from her forehead, allowing Ellie to help her to her feet. She funneled essence to the torn muscle in her leg, the searing pain, which once would have had her curled up in a ball on the ground in tears, now something she knew to simply grit her teeth against until it was healed. She kept her breathing even as she tried not to focus on the uncomfortable sensation of flesh knitting together, gazing instead at the dead Elgoriot lying a few feet away, its eyeless face smashed in, slivers of teeth broken where she had punched it repeatedly.
"You can do better than that,"
observed Ellie as Asha released her grip on the woman's shoulder, able to stand on her own 2 feet again.
"You are distracted."
Asha walked over to the nearest fountain, cupping her hand and drinking from the crisp, clear water, then splashing more on her face.
"Hard not to be,"
she muttered eventually, stomach twisted into knots as she cast a worried eye toward the forest. It had been a week since Diara's threat. Over 2 days since Cadence promised to return in time to help Asha with the inevitable confrontation. Had something happened to him? Had he ever been intending to return? As little as she trusted him, she saw no real advantage to him in lying to her. He wanted the Boundary stable just as much as she did. But he had spoken of his task in terms of hours, a day at most, confident that he would be back in time. Which surely meant that something had to have delayed him.
"He isn't someone to make promises lightly,"
Ellie assured her, evidently having no difficulty discerning her thoughts.
"If he can make it, he will."
Asha squinted at her.
You sure you don't know what's going on?
Ellie was supposed to be at least partly constructed from Caden's mind. On some level, she had a direct connection to him. The woman shrugged and shook her head.
I am part of the Dokken far more than part of him, she said, again as if reading Asha's thoughts. He designed this place, me, to be an illusion. That illusion would too easily have been broken if I had been able to simply know what he was thinking.
Asha acceded the point without argument, turning her face toward the clear sun and drinking in its warmth.
Do I have a chance against Diara if he isn't here? Your training gives you a chance, but your paths to victory are still significantly fewer without him. Your window of opportunity will be small.
Ellie's voice was calm.
Diara will initially assume that her ability to manipulate time is more than enough to deal with you, as it was last time, and attack at close quarters. That gives you one, possibly two, opportunities to land a hit that will end the fight.
She shrugged.
Once she realizes that you're a threat, she will switch tactics, keep her distance. The amount of essence you have at your disposal means that it will be harder for her to simply cut through your defenses with Khan, and it is still possible that she will make a mistake. But the likelihood is that she would win, if it came to that.
Asha snorted.
I am filled with confidence. Some people need to be told what they want to hear to make them perform better, but others need the truth. You are the latter, said Ellie confidently. I'll take that as a compliment, I suppose.
Asha glanced at the sun, the butterflies in her stomach only intensifying. She still desperately hoped that Caden would appear at the last moment, but deep down she knew, had known since she'd woken this morning to an empty palace, that he wasn't coming. There was no way that he would leave his arrival until this close to the deadline. As if in response to her thoughts, a boom shivered the crystalline palace behind her, and a fiery bloom of energy exploded from the treetops below, followed by several smaller bursts in quick succession. Asha pulled in a few steadying breaths, forcing herself to calm and reigniting her essence armor as Ellie placed a reassuring hand on her shoulder. Diara had returned. It was 10 minutes later that the Venerate finally strode into view. Asha's heart sank at the sight, though at least Diara's clothing was tattered and scorched, an indication, along with her dark expression, that she had not dealt with the wards as easily as had Caden. That was good. Far better if she was distracted, irritated, as well as weakened. Asha stood patiently at the top of the hill, watching tensely, allowing essence to heighten her senses in case Diara simply decided to attack. Ellie had long since made herself scarce, concerned that the Venerate would turn her ability to manipulate the Dokken against Asha, a concern that Asha shared if she was being honest. The dark-haired woman glared up at Asha, coming to a slow stop by one of the fountains, perhaps 50 feet away.
So, you have made the foolish choice, she called, a statement rather than a question. Yet I understand. You are young. You are reckless. I will still give you this last chance to change your mind.
Asha kept her breathing steady, despite every nerve being taut.
No.
Diara sighed, looking almost bored.
You could save the man you love and continue protecting your country. What more could you ask for? Why won't you accept this offer? Because I don't trust you, Asha replied simply. Perhaps you're telling the truth, perhaps you're not. But I know who you are, and I know the things you've done.
Diara's expression darkened further.
I see, she said. Then it seems that we have nothing more to say to one another.
She vanished. Asha breathed in the cool, sharp air. She had been watching, waiting for this moment. She had seen the way Diara's muscles had tensed, saw, in a fraction of a second, the terrifyingly fast footsteps as they bent blades of grass, spotted the hazy blur against the horizon off to her left. Her instincts, honed over the past week of constant punishment for failure, kicked in. Her body was already flooded to bursting with essence, allowing her to move with a grace and speed impossible for any other human. She flickered forward toward the blur, drew the steel that was hanging at her side, and thrust hard, as fast as she had ever done before. Asha's arm shivered as the blade struck home. She gasped, feeling almost as stunned as Diara looked as the venerate appeared abruptly at the end of her blade, scarlet blood already beginning to seep from the deep wound. Asha snarled and thrust again, forcing herself closer, pushing it deeper as the other woman batted feebly against the steel, clearly in shock. The sword had caught Diara in the stomach, not a killing blow, but a serious one. Asha reached out. There was no time for hesitation or sportsmanship here. She needed to incinerate the venerate, and the only way to do that without being blocked was through physical contact. Diara recovered. It happened so fast that Asha didn't comprehend it for a second. One moment her hand was almost to Diara's forehead, the next the woman was lurching away, ripping herself off the blade by sheer force of will, screaming in fury and pain as bright droplets of crimson sprayed the air. Asha took a half-step after her and unleashed a molten torrent of energy at the venerate, but it dissipated against an invisible wall almost a foot from Diara's face. Diara vanished again. Asha tensed, but the telltale signs this time said that the woman was retreating, moving back almost to where she had started. Asha directed another scything beam of energy at the point at which she anticipated Diara was going to stop, but even as she did so, she could feel her stomach twisting into a knot of fear.
"I'll take it," snarled Diara, stumbling as she appeared, hands covered in blood as she clutched at where the sword had struck home. She was standing slightly to the left of where Asha had aimed her essence. To Asha's horror, her opponent straightened, the stomach wound already almost fully healed. The venerate's eyes blazed as they focused on Asha. "You will pay for that," she promised. Asha took a deep breath and attacked with everything she had. The world became a whirlwind of fire and chaos, Asha running and leaping, constantly moving and surrounding herself in swathes of deadly fire, which not only forced Diara to focus on protecting herself, but better revealed exactly where the other woman was, as she scythed through it with her Khan shield. Several times more Diara attempted to attack, only for Asha to anticipate correctly, or correctly enough, and either dodge or in some cases actually try a counter-strike. None were anywhere near as successful as her first effort, though, and Diara's relatively cautious attacks came closer and closer to landing, a few even scoring hits, and causing Asha to stagger, barely recovering in time to deflect the next. The palace grounds were in cinders, with scattered or melted stone and ground scorched clear of foliage all that remained. Still Diara worried at her, blinking in and out of sight every few seconds. Sometimes it would be to attack, other times it would simply be to force Asha to react, to focus on where she might be. Diara started sending out curling swathes of Khan as distractions, creating disturbances in the swirling fiery essence that looked similar to the ones made by her disruption shield, more than once forcing Asha to hesitate longer than she could afford. In the midst of it all, in a surreal, out-of-body way, Asha found herself surprised. She was resisting one of the venerate, one of the most powerful people to ever have lived, and Asha was holding her own. It couldn't last, though, of course. Asha lashed out in rhythm at what she could have sworn was Diara launching another attack, only to discover that she was thrusting at empty air. She turned too late, reacted too slowly to the sudden shadow at her shoulder. The dark dagger plunged into her back, forcing its way through the essence armor, Khan rapidly infecting her body and sealing away all that power beyond her grasp. She lashed out with what essence she had left, but it wasn't enough. She went to her knees, pain shooting through her spine as her eyes rolled toward her attacker. Diara was a ghastly sight, even though she was already healing. She was naked, every inch of her flesh, including her face, burned away, scorched black and red. Her bared teeth were too visible through missing lips that were gradually filling out again, blistered skin easing and then covered over. Diara had fooled her, Asha realized vaguely. She almost laughed. She had been tracking movements through the fiery essence first, and then verifying them by looking for imprints on the ground and the telltale blur of motion. Diara had realized that, had faked moving with a Khan shield again, but this time allowed herself to be burned nearly to death in order to conceal her true whereabouts. Asha wished that she could take comfort in moral victories right now.
I'll tell Davian you'll be waiting for him, hissed the monstrosity that was the Venerate as her outer layer of skin began to reform, the last of the essence fire dying around her as she extinguished it with Khan. She stabbed again, ferocious, eyes wild. Asha barely felt the steel tip slip into her chest. Her breathing grew sharp, panicked. Her vision became hazy. She focused, using every remaining scrap of her concentration. She could still see the connected reserves, inaccessible though they now were. She'd considered this, though she knew it was ill-advised, incredibly risky, stupid even, except that there were no other options now. She forced her eyes open again to find Diara, her face restored, peering down at her, expression coldly triumphant.
You put up quite a fight, but there's nothing left for you to do now, girl, she said in smug satisfaction. You were never going to be able to beat me.
Asha tried to respond, but her breath caught. Blood was filling her lungs. She coughed instead, swallowing her words. Diara smiled.
Slow down. Try again, she said, relaxed now that her victory was assured.
Her disruption shield seemed to have dropped too. Asha leaned forward so that her mouth was close to Diara's ear.
I said, I know, she rasped weakly.
The thin sliver of essence was snaking into Diara's ear before the Venerate knew what was happening. Diara didn't even register it at first. She had been entirely focused on Asha, not anticipating anything from behind. Then something plainly warned her, a moment of sensation, of feeling, and her eyes went wide. She screamed. She fell back, agonized shrieks only growing in intensity as the Khan barrier separating Asha from essence vanished. Asha gasped as energy flooded to her wounds. She scrambled backward away from the Venerate, and the glowing figure now standing behind her. Garadus stared grimly down, another thread of essence sliding out from his hand and lodging itself in Diara's other ear. Her entire head began to glow.
You drew me here and risked my life in the process, he said to Asha, ignoring the shrieks. Had she caught even a hint of my presence, I would be dead.
Didn't have much choice, choked Asha, still recovering,
her gaze fixed in horror on the writhing woman.
What are you doing to her?
Hurting her mind, making her unfocused, unable to manipulate Khan.
Garadus's words were calm, but something in his eyes was feral, more so than Asha had ever seen before. He walked around in front of the Venerate, so that she could see who it was that was hurting her.
She is reaping her own harvest, Ashalia. Do not feel pity for her.
A blade of essence lashed out, and suddenly Diara's arm was dropping to the ground and rolling away, cleanly severed. There was no blood. Diara's screams somehow increased in pitch and intensity again.
Stop! Asha stumbled weakly to her feet. Surely you can just knock her out?
And where would the justice be in that?
Asked Garadus, his tone controlled. There was something underneath it, though, a hardness that made Asha shiver.
There is no point in hesitating here, Ashalia.
Stop!
Asha said the word with more authority this time, stepping forward and raising her hands threateningly.
Caden said that if she dies in here, Cassandred will be able to tell. He will just kill her in reality and let her come back in a different body. This would be for nothing.
Garadus ignored her. Asha let white energy ignite around both her hands. Already her essence had nearly finished its restoration of her body.
I will stop you by force if I have to, she said harshly,
still slightly out of breath. There was nothing for a few seconds, and then finally Garadus scowled. He gestured sharply, and Diara's screams cut short, the naked woman slumping to the ground. She was, Asha was relieved to see, unconscious but alive.
"Where is Telkomar?"
asked Garrodus, breathing heavily.
"I don't know,"
admitted Asha, head still spinning.
"He was supposed to be here."
Garrodus snorted.
"Unsurprising."
"What did you do to her?"
Asha chewed her lip as she stared at the Venerate's limp form, still unsure whether it was entirely safe to approach.
"How did you stop her without using Khan?"
"Essence is a powerful tool when applied with finesse," said Garrodus absently. "She will not be able to use Khan, or essence, or probably be able to walk, for that matter. The ward in her mind disrupts almost everything. It will decay in due course, but that will take weeks. Regular bindings will be enough to restrain her for now."
He slung Diara over his shoulder and stomped off, clearly angry, though whether at Asha or himself, she couldn't tell. Then he paused, glancing back at her.
"Your timing was good," he added. "The vessel is almost complete and will be delivered soon."
He gazed at her grimly.
"Once Telkomar returns from wherever he is, you can finally get out of this place."
He turned and continued, leaving Asha gaping after him. Asha and Garrodus sat opposite each other, the table between them, Diara lying on a couch in the corner. Despite the woman's bonds, Asha couldn't help but cast constant glances in her direction. Garrodus, on the other hand, seemed wholly unconcerned about her presence now.
"So you really can get me out of here, and keep the boundary up," said Asha finally, no longer able to take the silence.
There had been no conversation as she had followed Garrodus back to the palace, her head spinning, still recovering from the fight and trying to keep her wits about her as the intense thrill and panic of battle wore off.
"As long as we find a replacement."
Even saying it out loud left a bad taste in her mouth.
"You're still sure there's no other way?"
"I am. There is not," said Garrodus.
There was neither satisfaction nor regret in the words, just simple, calm certainty. Asha grimaced.
"How would it work?"
"You would share a reserve with whomever you were linked to," said Garrodus. "We have built in a failsafe. You will be able to break the connection with them at any time, though that would ultimately bring down the Ilshara, of course, not to mention kill whoever was in the tributary."
Asha blanched. She still couldn't imagine how she was going to bring herself to subject someone else to that torture. And yet Caden had done it to his friends. She gave an unconscious shiver at the thought, and, not for the first time, prayed that Davian truly understood the man he had chosen to support. When she refocused on Garrodus, he was staring to the left, down at Diara's sleeping form. Asha flinched at the look in his eyes. She had seen it a couple of times now when the Lith had thought she wasn't paying attention. Something savage. Garrodus caught her glance and glowered, looking away.
"You hate her," said Asha quietly.
Garrodus issued a barking laugh of surprise, short and loud.
"You could say that."
He shook his head, but didn't look at Diara again.
"As Telkomar explained to you about Lycanius, about his history with the Lith?"
"A little. He said it was why he needed to erase his memories, so that he could get it back, and that it was the only thing that could kill the Venerate. But that's all I know," she admitted.
Garrodus grunted.
"Not long after the Ilshara was raised, Andriel, the man who originally made Lycanius and who was once a member of the Venerate, came to us with an offer. He had finally managed to take back the blade from Gassandrid, Telkomar, and the others, and would give us stewardship of her as a deterrent to the other Venerate from leaving Talangol."
He shook his head at the memory.
"We were at war with them, so that was a gift too good to pass up."
He drew in a breath.
However, Andriel also made a number of unusual stipulations surrounding the blade's release. The other venerate had to come for it without the intention of taking it. We could use it against them if they left the safety of the Ilshara, but they were to be allowed safe passage within Reskartha, and, once they found their way there, also allowed to return to Talangol. He paused. And our own stipulation. Once Lycaenius was taken, whoever took it had to release us from Reskartha within a year and a day, or its ownership would revert to us in full. After which, we would be able to use it however we pleased, whenever we pleased. It would have let us use Khan again, with enough precision that doing so would not have killed us. It would have freed us. Let us travel inside the Ilshara to destroy the Venerate once and for all. Given us more than enough control to rebuild the Javet, too. It would have changed everything, he finished softly. Asha swallowed.
Why would Andriel do all of that?
I can only assume because he knew the future. Others of my people have suggested that he also saw Shamalith's corruption in each of the Venerate and knew that the only way to ensure whoever controlled Lycaenius was truly free of his influence was to have their memories erased.
Garrodus shrugged tiredly.
He obviously had his motives, but there are some deals you simply do not turn down.
Asha nodded slowly.
So, how does this relate to Diara?
Perhaps 500 years ago, the Venerate finally figured out ways to reach Reskartha through our defenses. Started trying to get to Lycaenius. Though all the Lith were bound to protect it, I was the guardian, the one truly responsible for it, and so the one who spoke to each of them. They tried so many methods, direct attacks, deception, bribery, but none of them ever worked. Reskartha was a prison, but it was a prison that gave us near unlimited power. Not even all the Venerate combined could face us down there. And they knew it.
He held her gaze.
And, of course, they were terrified of Lycaenius falling into our hands unrestricted. They feared one of their number relenting, taking the bargain and then being unable to fulfill it. They knew exactly what we would do with it, given the chance.
His face twisted. Blue eyes hard.
Diara was among the first to decide to test the limits of the binding. She came into Reskartha and kidnapped a dozen of my people. My friends.
He swallowed.
Though she captured, she tried to take back through the Ilshara. It was an experiment, you see. She had been told it would kill them, but she wanted to see if we were telling the truth.
Asha swallowed.
That's horrible.
That is far from the worst of it.
Garrodus's voice was taut with restrained fury.
My people, my dying people, have been at war with the Venerate for millennia, and of all of them, Diara is the worst.
Garrodus all but spat the name.
Not responsible for the most deaths, perhaps, but certainly the ones we all remember. She was the one who tortured, who taunted, who was more than willing to use our friends and loved ones in the most horrific ways to try and get control of that cursed blade. Ask any of the Lith which of the Venerate they would kill first, and none would have a moment's hesitation. Even Talcamar, who has caused us so much pain, is not considered in the same breath.
Garrodus's tone was thick with spite and disgusted, almost visceral hatred. If he were left alone with Diara, Asha suddenly had no doubt that he would happily torture and ultimately kill her, regardless of the consequences. She swallowed. These grudges were so deep, built across lifetimes, centuries. It was hard to imagine what Garrodus must be feeling, hard even to comprehend sometimes.
So why are you making things so difficult for Caden, Talcomar, then? She asked. Don't you have the same enemies? The same goals?
The same enemies, agreed Garrodus. But Talcomar wants to seal the rift. He wants to eliminate any chance of a past in which he destroyed us, being changed.
He waved his hand as he saw her about to protest.
Oh, I know that he does not believe it is possible. But there is a difference between belief and knowing. And my people have not survived as we have by resigning ourselves to fate.
You're saying you want to keep the rift open?
Asha mulled over the concept. The binding that Garrodus had forced Caden into meant that Caden couldn't kill any of the augurs, not that that meant anything for Davian, and she had a hard time thinking of it as a problem. But Caden had explained to her the terrifying consequences of Shemaleth getting to the rift, too.
With the Venerate dead, there will be no one capable of releasing Shemaleth from the Ilshara. And even if they did, knowing his weakness to essence, we believe we can protect the rift from him.
Garrodus's tone was confident.
If we are given time and opportunity, there truly is a chance that we can undo all of this, Ashalia.
Asha said nothing to that. There was not much she could say, really. It sounded like desperation to her, given everything she'd been told. But she wasn't about to provoke Garrodus by admitting as much. Garrodus watched her, then sighed.
I feel that I must also forewarn you. Should Talcomar succeed, should he close the rift, then you will become a target.
He said the words simply, a vague apology in them.
If the opportunity to go back is denied us, then we will be forced to come for you. Because with the rift gone, we will be able to survive without the Siphon's protection. And as far as we have been able to tell, the only way to break its connection is through your death.
He held Ash's gaze.
I am sorry. That is just the way it is.
The threat, delivered as a statement of fact, nothing more, sent a chill through her.
But if the rift is closed, wouldn't the Siphon cease to function anyway?
She asked, eventually, pleased to hear the words come out calm and steady. Garrodus gave her a surprised look.
Of course not. Khan as a power will be eliminated from this world and will no longer be able to be drawn from the Dark Lands. The creatures which rely on it will die, and no one will have the ability to manipulate it anymore. But that which is already in this world will remain, he assured her. We're sealing off the quarry, but destroying the stone we have already mined from it would be another matter entirely. Khan is the underlying machinery of this world, as certain and unavoidable as death itself. It will never truly disappear.
There was silence as Asha processed the words. The revelation had little impact on her. It was a concern that seemed for a very distant future right now. But it was still interesting to know.
Well, if it comes to that, Garrodus, then I will be ready for you, she said,
holding the burning man's gaze. Garrodus studied her, then gave a short, approving nod.
What will you do now?
Asked Asha, moving on from the uncomfortable topic. A sliver of guilt needled at her.
I can't release you from the Dokken.
Garrodus shrugged.
I will abide until Talcomar returns, he said. The palace is large enough for the two of us, and you will need me to restore the mental block on Diara should Talcomar not show himself for a while.
He eyed the walls.
Of course, I do hope that he comes back before the next shift, because while I do not know the consequences, I imagine that it could get unpleasant for all concerned.
Asha found herself ruefully agreeing. The shift might disconnect Garrodus and Diara safely, but the abrupt shutting down of the Dokken could also very well destroy their minds.
And if he doesn't return by then?
He will. Garrodus's blue eyes were certain. You are far too important, and Diara far too great a prize for him to stay away for long.
The conversation met a natural, if somewhat abrupt, end after that. Garrodus clearly disinterested in small talk. Soon enough, the Lith bade her a polite good evening and retired, leaving Asha alone in the room with the bound, still unconscious veneret. She stared out the window at the essence-lit fountains for a while, only starting from her reverie at a hand on her shoulder.
"Ellie,"
she said, blinking. The woman had kept out of sight since the fight.
"Are you all right?"
Ellie glanced across at the bound veneret.
"I thought it best to remain hidden while Garrodus was here. But I see things went well."
"As well as they could,"
agreed Asha. She rubbed her face tiredly as she stared at Diara's sleeping form.
"Garrodus says that the Lith have come up with a way for me to leave. And this troubles you?"
Asha shook her head.
"No, yes, I don't know,"
she admitted heavily.
"Of course I want to leave, but asking someone else to be in here for the shifts is... I am not certain that I can do it."
Ellie was silent for a moment.
"Sometimes, not wanting to share the burden is a form of selfishness, too," she said quietly. "You are strong, Asha, but so are others. You are the only one who has the sort of power that Tal needs. You need to trust that you are not the only one."